You are listening to the Makers Church podcast. For more information about our community, please visit makerschurch.org.
Welcome to Makers Church. If we have never met, my name is Shalise, and that probably means you've started coming to Makers sometime in the past 3 months while I have been on sabbatical. If we have met and we know each other and we haven't seen each other since I've been back, I would love to see you. I have a hug for every single one of you. 4 hugs for your kids. Not gonna lie, like, I was really sad and I missed you guys while I was on sabbatical, but I missed your kids like so much more. And as Kristen was introducing the kids interns, I'm like, that could be me. Who knows? I could go back to college. I'll be a junior at Point Loma. 40-year-old junior in college. It's never too late to chase your dreams of being in kids ministry. So, whew, yes, I'm glad to be back. It's been a long 3 months away. At first, I was like, it's going to fly by so fast. And it feels like that. It feels like no time has passed at all. And so much time has passed. And when we returned, I knew that the number one question that Drew and I were going to get was, how is your sabbatical? I just know everybody wants to know, like, how was your sabbatical? And have you ever had that thing in life that you, like, plan for and you prepare for and you put so much energy and effort into, and then before it even starts, you just know, nope, like, that is not what is going to happen. That is what happened to Drew and I on the sabbatical. And it reminded me of like when I was a little kid. I remember the first time I went to the San Diego County Fair, my mom and my dad who's here, so I have to be on my best behavior, can't talk about him. My dad took me to the San Diego County Fair, and I remember that they were putting my socks on me in the parking lot. And as a little kid, I could not stand the socks that had the seam at the top of the toes. It was like the absolute worst, like could not handle it. And my mom puts these socks on me. See, mom put these socks on me. It wasn't my dad, it was my mom. My mom put these socks on me. And instantly I start losing my mind. I am sobbing, I am screaming. I'm like, I can feel the socks, I can feel the socks. And I remember just like being a little kid and watching my parents be like, what are we doing? Like, we're not getting out of this parking lot. Like, this is the absolute worst. We hadn't even gotten to the fair yet, and I had already ruined the whole day. I go camping with my husband and a bunch of our friends, and my husband was coming up later from work, and so I'm like, I'm gonna go early, I'm gonna get the tent set up, that way when everybody gets there, we'll just be chilling, having a great time. And I open up our tent, and I hadn't realized that this was the tent that the last trip, I had accidentally cut a huge gash into the tent and was like, don't forget, don't take this tent ever again camping. And that was the tent that I had brought. And I was like, great, well, now we're just going to be sleeping in the wild with all the bugs. I go to open up our sleeping mat, and it is covered in black mold. Because I was like, oh, yeah, remember when it rained? And we just like, we're like, we'll take care of this later, and threw it into our garage. Spoiler alert, we did not take care of it later. And before my friends had even got there, like, the trip was already ruined for me. This is our, like, not going to happen. It's done. Like, we might as well just pack it up and go home. Right? And we all have those seasons and those moments in life where, like, nothing is going the way that we had plotted or planned. Right? We thought we knew exactly how we wanted it to go. Have you ever heard that phrase, like, we make plans and God laughs? It's like, God has been laughing a lot at me this past few months. Because Drew and I have been on a journey, on a sabbatical, that was nothing like we had planned for. And it's so appropriate that the scripture that we are diving into today from the Book of Common Prayer comes from this last Wednesday, this passage in the Sermon on the Mount. And it talks about two types of journeys that people go on. And when I read it, I was like, man, this is it. Like, this was our sabbatical journey. And I want to read this passage with us this morning. This is Matthew 7. Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction. And many enter through it, but small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life. And only a few find it. See, my plan when I went on sabbatical is I wanted to enter the wide gate. I wanted the spacious pasture. I wanted to frolic in the sun. What's the Dixie Chicks? The wide open spaces. That's what I wanted. Room to make big mistakes while I was, I'm just kidding. I didn't want to make mistakes, but I wanted leisure. I wanted rest. I wanted like deep soul relaxation. I saw Derek's sabbatical and he went on like 7 trips and I was like, yes, this is so epic. Like that is what I want. But the minute I went to step through that like metaphorical gate of sabbatical, it was immovable. And Drew's and I's sabbatical plan originally had been to take a 5-week national parks road trip. We're gonna go all the way up to Washington and then down the coast of Oregon. It was gonna be so epic. It was gonna be so romantic. It was gonna be so magical. And then I was gonna go to Big Sur at the end for the silent retreat that Derek had went on where he said like he encountered God in this way and his whole life was changed. I'm like, I want that. I'm gonna do that same thing Derek did, and it's gonna be epic. And then I was gonna get home just in time to plant my fall garden before heading back to school. And then if you don't know, Drew and I are going through the IVF process, and so we were gonna do IVF in August, and I was like, it's perfect timing. Like before we go back to school and Makers and Life continues, we'll do all these things. And then on Labor Day, Drew and I are gonna take one last trip. Maybe go to Cabo. Go somewhere tropical, all-inclusive, don't have to do a thing, just relax. Just reflect on this epic summer that we had where God showed up and moved and we felt so refreshed and renewed. Just this wide open gate. Here's what actually happened. Before we even went on sabbatical, we had to make a plan for sabbatical. Right, so in April, Drew and I start planning this road trip, and we're getting permission from the elders and the pastors and the board of, hey, here's the things we want to do. And we're excited, and we're like, it's going to be worth it. It's going to be so epic. And we come home on Easter Sunday, and our entire basement had flooded. And we were like, oh, that's not good. Like, that's not supposed to happen. And so 4 months and tens of thousands of dollars later, we finally had our basement fixed. But we were like, ooh, this kind of puts a damper in the plans a little bit, you know? Like, now we're in debt going into this trip that's definitely going to probably put us more in debt. But we thought, what's a more millennial thing to do than be like, I'm in debt, I must travel, right? So I was like, babe, this is our birthright. Like, we have to go, you know? And so we're like, forget it. Gate, immovable, whatever. We'll, like, squeak through. Then I get an email on May 19th, 10 days before I'm supposed to start our sabbatical, from the monastery saying, hey, Big Sur 101, like there was a huge landslide and the monastery shut down. My retreat was canceled. And I'm like, okay, not so wide of a gate, but that's fine. You know what? Instead of Big Sur, I'll just go to Solvang. If I've got to commune with God in wine country, so be it. Like I will sacrifice. You know, Derek can have his experiences, I'll have mine. So I'm like, that's fine. Like, it's going to be fine. Then sabbatical actually begins. June 4th, day after my birthday, up at my parents' house, celebrating my birthday. Our little corgi with her tiny little stumpy legs decides she's going to jump off of the back porch of my parents' house to chase the big dogs. She comes back limping, can't even move her back leg. And Drew and I were like, oh, that's not good. She broke her leg. 12 weeks of recovery, they told us. Oh, and it's going to be $6,000. And I was like, Drew, say goodbye to Oli. Like, this is where we part ways. Like, it's been nice knowing you for these 3 years, but our time has come. And I'm just like, okay, well, that's not completely like a closed gate. Like we could still sneak our way through, right? Like we could find some poor sucker to watch Oli and carry her out to the bathroom every day and we'll go spend money like the bank's gonna pay for it when we get back and it'll be fine and we'll come back and we'll like just, it'll all have taken care of itself, right? But if I've learned anything in my years of life, it's that if you have to force your way through a gate, you probably shouldn't be going that way. Trip canceled. Drew and I just knew, like, it's not gonna happen. This is not the path that we're supposed to take. We wanted the wide open gate in the spacious land, but that's fine. We're not gonna take that path. But you know what? It could be worse, right? At least now we'll get to stay home and rest. We'll get to stay home and just be together and rest. And then we get a call from our doctor. Hey, good news. Somebody dropped out. You can actually start IVF in June. And I was like, oh my gosh, like this is amazing. Yeah, like this is God moving. This is why all of this stuff happened. Like all is not lost. The door is not completely shut. And I felt like we were back to like a wide-ish gate. All right, so I have this new excitement. There's a new plan, a new adventure that we're gonna go on together. And so June 19th, a couple weeks into sabbatical, we do our retrieval, and we get 27 eggs. If you know nothing about IVF, that is an insane number. I was so excited. I was like, we're going to have 27 babies. And Drew's like, wait, whoa, no, that's not what I signed up for. I'm like, God has willed it. Let it be done. But I couldn't see in the moment necessarily like everything that God was doing, but I just felt like this is the thing, right? Like he's doing something over here, and I was so focused over here, I couldn't see what was happening. You ever heard the phrase, or maybe you said it a lot, like hindsight's 20/20? Like, whoop, well, how often do we feel like we can't really see what God is doing in the moment? Right? We can't really see all of the goodness and the glory and the he works all things for the good. We don't really see it in the moment until oftentimes the moment has passed. And I was talking to my therapist about this concept, and she reminded me of this passage in Exodus. So, Shalise, there's this story in Exodus where Moses is like begging God to show me your glory. He's like, God, like, show, like, he was being pursued by his enemies, and he was looking for the direction. He's like, God, just show me your glory. And God responds to him and says, I will cause all of my goodness to pass in front of you. But then what God tells Moses, he's like, you got to cover your eyes. You can't see it. You're not going to be able to process it in the moment. And he's like, and you have to wait till I pass by you. And it says that Moses covered his eyes as the glory and goodness of God passed by, that he didn't even see it, until it says that he removed his hands from his eyes and Moses saw God's back. And it was this thing that she was trying to remind me of, that Moses could only see God fully like after he had already passed by. And I think I needed to like remember that truth in that moment. Like I can't always tell in the moment what God is doing, right? We don't always see his goodness, and sometimes we can only make sense of the things that are happening once the moment has passed. But once the moments had passed and I'm getting into June and July and halfway through sabbatical, I'm looking back and I'm like, this is why. This is why our house flooded. This is why our dog has stumpy little legs and bad genetics. Like, this is why Big Sur, you know, had that landslide. It was for me and God and our 27 children we're gonna have. This is God working all things to the good so that I could come back here after sabbatical and be like, guys, God is so good. So we go through all of these things, these little things happening. We're about halfway through. Wednesday, July 5th, we get a call. It says, hey, of your 27 eggs, 3 made it through genetic testing. And I was devastated. I was like, that's not good math. I don't do math, but that's not a high percentage. And that gate that I had been walking through, that new gate, that new adventure, like started to feel a little more narrow and not so wide anymore. And I was really wrestling, and don't get me wrong, like 3 eggs is amazing. For women my age, 40, the average retrieval rate and success rate of an embryo retrieval is 0.6. So I knew that like three was a miracle, but three did not meet my expectations because I wanted like 10. I had a number in my mind. Like I was like, I need 10 because there's a 25% success rate. And if I have 10 and we want to have two kids and you do the math, like that's going to guarantee that like we don't have to worry about statistics. It'll be a sure bet, like a done deal. If I'm honest, like I did not want to have to need a miracle. I didn't want to have to rely or trust in God in that moment. Like I didn't want to not be in control. I didn't want a narrow gate. Like after all that Drew and I have been through in our relationship and our marriage, like I wanted an open and easy road to parenthood. Because that's how I imagine being a parent is, right? You just have your kids, like all 27 of them, just take care of each other and magical, right? But I wanted it. I wanted it. I'm not ashamed to say it. Like, I didn't want to struggle. I'm tired of struggling. I don't want to do it anymore. We're good. Like, I get the point. I have learned the lesson. Like, let's just wide open spaces, straight line right there. I know that I should have known better. Like, I know that nothing in life is guaranteed. I know that I can't actually control things in life as much as I pretend that I can. But I felt like I just had this really desperate, desperate hope that somehow, like, this time wouldn't be so hard. And I don't feel like I was alone in maybe thinking that. Like, it wasn't crazy of me to think that because there were so many people speaking these, like, prophetic words and visions over us. I got so many messages from people in this very room, people I haven't talked to in years, people who have no idea that Drew and I are doing IVF, that we're going through this process. And I would just get random texts at all hours of the day saying, hey, I had a dream that you were pregnant. I had a dream that you had twins. I had a dream that you were pregnant with twins. I don't know what you're going through, but like, I just wanted you to know that like, God told me to tell you, and I never say this because it's weird, but he's like, God told me to tell you, like you were gonna have a baby. And so in my mind, it was like all of these signs and all of these things I was hearing were like pointing to like, yes, this is the road. Like this is gonna be it. So we get down to three and I'm nervous, I'm anxious, I'm feeling all the feelings and I'm trying desperately to like let go of control, but also like do this very controlled medicated thing, but not be in control. And we get to transfer day. And then we have to wait. If you have ever had to wait to take a pregnancy test, it is the longest 10-day wait that you've ever had. And we're waiting and we're waiting and we're waiting and we're waiting. And we wait, and we don't even cheat and do the one at home ourselves. Like, we waited for the blood test, and we went to the clinic, and they're like, great, we'll call you at 12, 12 o'clock, 12:05, 12:10, 1 o'clock. I am, like, just sitting on the couch going, like, they lied to me. I don't know what's happening, and I'm so anxious, and I'm so nervous, and I just can't stop my mind from racing, and it's going and going and going and going, and then we get the call. And I hear, like, eight women on the other end of the phone. And they're like, congratulations, you're pregnant. And I don't know if I like screamed or like audibly like, I just started weeping. I started weeping like years of emotion and excitement and release. It was like I was having a physical expulsion of all of this stuff that I had just been carrying and carrying. And I was like, oh my gosh, like it's happening. I can finally breathe. I told Drew, I said, I feel like I'm breathing for the first time in a long time. So we're so excited. We tell our family. You can't really like wait to tell people because they're like, how'd the transfer go? And you're like, you'll find out in 3 months. Like that doesn't really happen, right? So we tell our family and we tell all of our people and we celebrate and we rejoice. And it was such a beautiful time for us to hold on to just this incredible, immense joy, like we were watching God's goodness pass before our eyes. And then 5 days later, we get the call. And they say, hey, your blood work shows like it's dropped. You've lost the baby. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to feel. I didn't know how to respond because, like, that's not the path I'm walking right now. This is my baby path. This is the redemption path. This is the, like, yay, God works all things for the good path. And suddenly I didn't feel like I was on that path anymore. And, like, everything in my sabbatical was moving me towards this place of radical surrender. But I didn't know what to do with this overwhelming and, like, devastating realization that everything was actually out of my control. That I had to actually live in a state of radical surrender. Like, I couldn't undo the loss that we had just endured. Like, I couldn't widen the road magically that suddenly felt, like, too narrow for even Drew and I to, like, both walk the path together. And I think there's these moments in life where we stand at, like, this crossroad, right? Like, we're in that moment, and you know you have a choice to make, right? You're like, how do I want to respond to this thing? And these moments happen all the time, right? It's not like we enter a gate when we, like, begin following Jesus, and then we're just on that path forever, right? Like, we constantly are faced with this choice of, like, life is going to go one of two ways, and we get to choose which one. We get to choose, do we want the easy way out, or do we want to choose the road that leads to the hard things that we know could lead us to life, but it's hard to see, right, in the moment when you're choosing. Like, sometimes we don't get to choose the road that we travel, right? Sometimes we're on a road and suddenly it just takes a sharp turn. And you're like, ooh, narrow path, yeah. You ever seen those videos of those guys driving in, like, the mountains of Guatemala, and you just look down and there's the bus and, like, the road is 2 inches shorter than the tire? That's how I was feeling, right? I'm like, I can't go backwards. Like, there's nowhere to go but forward. But, man, this road is, like, uncomfortably narrow. And when Drew and I found ourselves, man, just walking this road of grief that we had been on before, I knew in that moment, like, we can't fix this. We can't undo it. But we do get to choose how we want to respond to it. And I knew deep down how I did not respond to our first miscarriage almost a year ago. Like, I retreated, I went in, it was dark, it was very, very dark. But I knew with this one, I could just hear it, like, count it all joy. That's the choice, right? Count it all joy whenever you face trials of many kinds. And so this truth, I think, began to work in and through us, that this narrow road had less and less to do with, like, the sufferings or the trials we were going to endure. Like, that's not what makes a narrow road. Like, Scripture tells us that we are all going to face trials of many kinds. Like, we can't avoid those roads. We can't escape those roads. It's not like if you just do all the right things in life, you'll never have to walk that narrow road. But the thing that few can do, it says, right? That passage says that few find that road. Well, if everybody faces trials, how come only a few find that road? See where I'm going here? Like, it's not the road. The road is not like, oh, the trial, now you're on this narrow road. Like, everybody faces trials, but only a few find that narrow road that leads to life. And it hit me that the path that leads to life is a choice that we make. And it's when we choose joy in the midst of it all. Right? And I'm not talking about, like, toxic positivity. I need you to hear me when I say that. I'm not saying that we just go through trials and we're like, whoop, God works all things for the good. Who cares? On to the next. Like, that is not what I am advocating for. Choosing joy is not about ignoring, like, the sorrows that our circumstances might bring to us. But choosing joy is saying that even in this, there is joy to be found. Even in this. So how do you find that joy? Let me know when you figure it out. I'm just kidding. How do you find that joy? I don't know what's going to work for you, but I know that for me, like, it's a very personal thing. It's not going to be the same thing for any one of us. This road that I'm walking, that Drew's walking, it might not be the road that you're walking. And so choosing joy is something that we have to desperately seek out. Oftentimes, it's the opposite of the thing we're comfortable with. Right? Like when we went through our first loss, what felt really comforting was staying in bed and eating ice cream and watching reality TV and being like, well, at least my life isn't that, you know, and I'm not televised. And I was really into Scandoval. It got me through a lot for any of my Vanderpump Rules fans. It's okay. You don't have to out yourself, church. But that was very comfortable. That felt really good until 3 months later, and it didn't feel really good anymore because I had not been moving through and processing my grief. I hadn't been mourning. I hadn't been working this thing out. I was just sitting in it and hoping that it would pass. And I knew that this second time around, I was like, that's not the answer. Like, that was fine for a moment, but like that didn't bring me life. And so I was thinking about, like, what do I need to do to find life? And then I discovered pickleball. And everything was great after that. And I know what you're thinking, like, oh my gosh, you're that girl now. Yes, I am. Listen, pickleball is life. And I say that like jokingly, but also in all seriousness, because Drew and I had started playing pickleball casually with friends. And the day after our miscarriage was Tuesday. And Tuesday is pickleball day. And pickleball day is when I get to go see Lisa, and I get to see Mark, and I get to see Cody, and my sister, and Drew, and my friends, and Taylor comes out, and we play pickleball, and it's 2 hours of being outside in the sun. It's 2 hours of not thinking about anything except I'm going to destroy my husband on the other side of this net. It is 2 hours of just breathing and working out the deep things that I was feeling. And so the day after our miscarriage, it was Tuesday, and it was pickleball day. And I looked at Drew, and I was like, are we going to go play pickleball right now? Like, seriously? Like, I'm not going to be able to not cry this whole time. And we're just supposed to, like, be like, yay, everything is great. And we kind of looked at each other, and we were like, yeah, we're going to go play pickleball. Because everything in us right now wants to retreat, wants to not be near others, wants to, like, not, you know, like, have to say, like, sorry, I know what we told you last time I saw you, but that's changed, right? Like, that's a hard thing to confront. But we knew that, like, that's where we're going to find life. It's like getting back out on the pickleball court. And if you'd like to come join us on Tuesday, we'll have tryouts and see if you're good enough to join our team. We are elite athletes now, 3 months into playing pickleball, so, you know. One of the other things that my husband and I have really leaned into is going on little walks. Little walks with our little stumpy, expensive dog around our neighborhood. And we go on these little walks. And on these little walks, I work out a lot of things with God. I see a lot of things. I hear a lot of things. And what I began to realize during this sabbatical is like, I do not always know what to pray. But I know I can walk. I don't always know how to, like, make sense of what's happening and my feelings towards God and towards life, but, like, I know that I can walk. And I think, like, if you're in a season that you just can't make sense of, like, just go outside consistently and go on walks and see what happens. It sounds so simple, but something very, very powerful has happened in those moments. And I feel like that's been my time to pray. That's been my prayer, my communing with God. You know, 2 weeks ago, Pastor Mark read this quote that I love by Dom Chapman. It says, pray as you can, not as you can't. And I was like, I cannot pray right now. I can't use words because they just come out like, you know, but I can walk. So pray as you can, not as you can't. And on one of these walks, I remember thinking about this verse in Romans 8. Romans 8, 26, it says, meanwhile, the moment we get tired in the waiting, God's Spirit is right alongside helping us along. If we don't know how or what to pray, it doesn't matter. He does our praying in and for us, making prayer out of our wordless sighs and our aching groans. You know how you get wordless sighs and aching groans? Pickleball. It's a workout. Don't let those ladies in their 80s lie to you. It is a workout. But I love this imagery. It says, making prayer out of our wordless sighs and our aching groans. He knows us far better than we know ourselves, knows our pregnant condition. He knows our pregnant condition and keeps us present before God. And that's why we can be so sure that every detail in our lives of love for God is worked into something good. I am not so sure about a lot of things these days. But the one thing that I am certain of as small as the gate and narrow the road that leads to life. And only a few find it. Only a few find it. Why? Because nothing about the narrow road makes sense. The narrow gate is choosing to count it all joy whenever we face trials of many kinds. That does not make any sense. I want to be joyful when good things happen. Like, when I face trials, be joyful. Like, God, that doesn't make any sense. Of course, only a few people find that and choose that. The narrow gate is choosing to trust in the Lord with all of your heart and all of your soul and all of your might and all of your strength and leaning not on your own understanding. And in all of my ways, acknowledging God and seeing his goodness pass before me and trusting that somehow he makes the path straight. That doesn't make any sense. Of course, only a few find that. Right? The narrow gate is about recognizing and living in this truth that joy and sorrow are inextricably connected. They are one in the same, with the same measure that we are willing to hope. It's the same measure that we're opening ourselves up to sorrow. I love this poem by Khalil Gibran on joy and sorrow. And he says this, he said, then a woman said, speak to us of joy and sorrow. And he answered, your joy is your sorrow unmasked. And the selfsame well from which your laughter rises was oftentimes filled with your tears. And how else can it be? The deeper that sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain. Is not the cup that holds your wine the very cup that was burned in the potter's oven? And is not the lute that soothes your spirit the very wood that was hollowed with knives? When you are joyous, look deep into your heart and you shall find it is only that which is giving you sorrow that is giving you joy. And when you are sorrowful, look again in your heart and you shall see that in truth you are weeping for that which has been your delight. My favorite line from this poem, the deeper that sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain. And I think that is the good news, right? That is the gospel for me that I am living in right now, is that with the same measure and depth that we might have experienced sorrow, we can also experience that joy. Scripture says that like weeping may endure for the night, but joy comes in the morning. I don't know about you, but like I've got a lot of room for joy. I've got a lot of capacity and space for joy. I've got some deep, deep wells that I am just hoping and praying will be filled to overflowing. And maybe you resonate with that. Maybe you're here this morning and you find yourself in like that narrow road, that season of trials. And your choice that you have is to choose to find small moments of joy, those moments of life that remind you that like God's goodness is gonna pass over you. And you might not see it right now, but like it's going to pass. Like he is working all things for the good. Maybe you're here and you've been like for a long time on that narrow road and you are not seeing like the joy. It says that there's life and you're like, how long, you know, like echoing David in scriptures, like how long, oh Lord, how long do I have to walk this road before I experience that life that is promised? Maybe you don't even know like how to continue the journey because you're just exhausted and tired. Maybe you're here and you're not even on a road yet. Maybe you're just like, you know that there's a path ahead of you, a choice that you have to make. And maybe you're facing that decision, a sort of crossroads. One path looks a whole lot easier and a whole lot more appealing, but deep down you just have this sense that like there's something about this other road. It doesn't look so easy, but I feel like it's gonna lead to life. So we all have choices in front of us that we're making each and every day. And each and every day we need to choose. And one of the ways that we choose is by saying these things to God, to others, but speaking them out loud. And a lot of times before we make a choice, I know that we have that sense of like, I just need to hear from God, right? Like, I just need to hear from God, like, which path to take. And then I'll know, like, which road to take and where to go and what to do. But if you were like me, like, I was so focused on frolicking in the sun, I kind of forgot to, like, listen to God. I thought we had done that part already. I didn't know I had to, like, circle back to that again. And so I want to end our time this morning with just a short period of contemplative prayer. That's the month's focus and common prayer for this month. And to contemplate is simply to think about something for a prolonged period of time. And I know sometimes that can feel really uncomfortable. Like, we don't want to sit and think. I don't want to sit and think about my life, about what God's doing, about what's not happening. Sometimes that can feel really overwhelming. So we're gonna do it together. Because this is what I missed. 3 months away and this right here is what I've missed the most. I missed being able to be with my brothers and my sisters and my family and my friends and to be able to be together in these moments and to seek God together. And so I want us to just take a couple minutes as we close out, and I want us to just challenge ourselves to step outside of that comfort zone. So you can close your eyes. And as you're sitting, I just want you to take a really deep, deep breath. And I want you to visualize the road before you. What does it look like? Where is this road? I want you to imagine that you've entered the small gate. You step through that gate. Maybe it's iron. Maybe it's wood. Maybe it's made of stone. But you step through this small gate, and in your mind, you have chosen the narrow road. The road looks long. It's winding, but at the very end, you can just see this light. You can see it. It's small and it's flickering, but you can see this light and you know that it's life calling to you, beckoning to you to come and to walk down this road. And I want you to contemplate for a minute and imagine what it would look like to walk that road. Imagine the challenge you might face, but imagine also the hardest moment. And in that most difficult moment, imagine the sense of feeling that you are not alone. You can sense and you can feel God's presence, His goodness going before you and behind you and enveloping you all along this road. And I want you to imagine that even though this road is narrow and rocky and difficult to traverse, and maybe you feel alone in moments, that there's joy to be found on this journey. And I just want you to sit and contemplate, like, what would joy look like? What does joy look like on this narrow road? Maybe it's a beautiful ocean or spray of wildflowers or your grandmother's voice. Maybe it's pickleball or a Costco hot dog or carne asada fries. I just imagine this joy in these small moments as you're walking this road. And I just want you to imagine that you're walking this narrow road, contemplating all of these things that can bring you joy, and just suddenly you're so focused on the joy around you that you don't even see the road anymore. You know it's there, but you don't have time to worry. There's no space for fear. There's no room for doubt on this narrow road. And as you end this walk on this road, I just want you to take a moment and I want you to listen to what God would say to you as you are walking on this road. I want you to think about the voice of God. What does it sound like? What do you hear? What is He saying to you? Is He saying, I love you. You've got this. You can do hard things. You're not alone. You can do it. I want you to take another deep breath. And we're going to sit for one more minute in contemplative silence. And we're just going to listen. And my prayer is that God would just speak His voice over you. And the band's going to come up and we're going to play this next song. And as you're sitting, as you're thinking, the prayer team and some of the elders and myself, we're going to be here at the front. And if you feel like you just need some encouragement, some strength to know that you are not alone on this road, that someone is walking beside you, we would love to pray for you. And you can just come up to the front here by the piano anytime during this final song. So we're just going to sit for 1 minute and listen for that voice. Jesus, thank you for being on this road with us. Thank you for never leaving us or forsaking us. Thank you that your word says that we will see the goodness of God in the land of the living. Speak to us now in Jesus' name.
You are listening to the Makers Church podcast. For more information about our community, please visit makerschurch.org.